I have one question. It's possible if you can narrate to us the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. One question first is, who was Prahlad Maharaj before being Prahlad Maharaj?
Normally, in various yugas, ustedes sabe que hay cuatro. I'm speaking in Spanish. I'm getting,
no,
I know, I'm getting completely confused with this language.
Okay.
And we know that there are four yugas. Four yugas make one Mahayuga. Satyayuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kaliyuga. Then there are yuga. Yuga Sandhya and Yuga Samdhyamsa, which are intermediate periods after and before every yuga. So all of them makes one Mahayuga, and which is a total of 4,200,000. I'm getting very confused. After more than 4 million years.
I don't know, can you go 432,000?
Thousand.
And then it doubles?
So, it doubles.
864?
It's more than 4 million, though. For 4 million, 4 million yugas. That's for sure. So, thousand of those make one day of Brahma. So every yuga has different characteristics. One of the characteristics is that demons and devotees in Satya Yuga, they never take birth on the same planet. So you have planets of devotees and planets of demons. Okay. Then in Treta Yuga, demons and devotees, they take birth on the same planet. And sometimes in the same family. In Dwapara Yuga, they can be very close family members. And in Kali Yuga, demons and devotees are inside the same person, which is a person can be very, very virtuous, and some other time very demoniac, very bad. So because Kali Yuga is made in such a way that it's difficult to maintain always. Sama in Sanskrit, or in Sanskrit Yuga, is the first Samadhamas, Tapas or Cham quality or a Brahmana is that he is steady. He doesn't get very elated and very happy when something good happens. Like this. Nor he gets very sad or bitter when something bad happens. He knows that good things are just the preludio, which means
preludio.
That's in Spanish, but in English it's not prelude, maybe, or something bad. You know that something good happens means that good things itself, by karmic reaction, by karmic mechanism, will give you something bad. And when you get something bad, don't get too sad, because you know that very thing may give you a good future, a good episode in your life. So life is made of episodes, good one, bad one, but it's the same, because each one is just a moment, just a point inside a segment which leads somewhere. And we should be more concerned where we want to go than how we arrive. You see. So, Prahlad Maharaj was a great, great devotee. A very great devotee. But he born in a family of demons. His father was the great demon, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was extremely inimical to Vishnu, because Vishnu, in another incarnation, killed his brother. He was a demon anyway. You know, it's not that he became a demon, because that was his mission. Actually, casually, quote and unquote, we spoke about Jayavijaya this morning during breakfast, no, during lunch. We spoke about Jayavijaya, how the two gatekeepers became cursed by the four Kumaras, the sons of Brahma, because they didn't allow them to enter into Vaikuntha. And so Jayavijaya could come in this universe as devotees a certain number of times, or as demons three times. They choose to come here as demons externally, because they wanted to get over, you know, with the business quickly, and to get a discount. Yes, but actually, in their heart, they knew that Vishnu wanted to fight. Chivalrous nature that Vishnu has sometimes. So they came as demons, like very big demons. No normal jiva can be as demoniac and as powerful as Hiranyakashipu in action. So they had these three incarnations. The first incarnation was Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Hiranyakashipu was killed by Nishimadeva, and Hiranyaksha, before first Hiranyaksha, was killed by Varaha, and Hiranyakashipu by Narasimhadeva. Then they came again, they reincarnated again in a second incarnation as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Both of them, they were killed by Ramachandra. Then they came in Dwapara Yuga, and in Dwapara Yuga they became Shishupal and Dantavakra, and both of them they were killed by Krishna. They came for the fourth time actually in Kali Yuga, but it was a pure, you know, lila, although they were quite demoniac, you know, as Jagai and Madai. You know the story of Jagai and Madai. You know the story, Jagai and Madai?
No,
you heard it, more or less.
You know,
they were very. They were from Brahminical families during the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they became very degraded, very, very degraded. They were drunkards. They were murderers. They were thieves. They would do anything and everything you can imagine. They did. So they and one day. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leading his Sankirtan movement, but his devotees tried to avoid Jagai and Madai because they were the most demoniac person in the village, in actually in all the zone. So one day Nityananda Prabhu came, and Nityananda, they were going just like today we go in Sankirtan, no? And sometimes we go in couple. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preferred the devotees to go in couple, you know, in Sankirtan. And the Nityananda Prabhu's mate was Haridas Thakur. So Nityananda and Haridas Thakur were going together, you know. And Nityananda Prabhu had a very particular mood. He was very, very joyful. He didn't care. Sometimes he would stop. He was a sannyasi. He was a sannyasi, he was an ancient. And he would stop girls saying, hey, would you marry me? They sing. Sometimes he would, you know, I won't tell you so many things, but there are wonderful pastimes in various biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was quite an avaduta, but everything he did had an explanation, you know. Because when he would ask girls to marry him, because this girl, he could see who this girl was in the spiritual world, because all the people in Navadvip, they had, they were quite special people, they were not normal people. You know? So, Nityananda thought, well, we are preaching, so maybe we should make a bold step in convincing the most demoniac of all. If we convince them, then the people would accept us as bona fide. So we tried to go to Jagai and Madai, and Jagai and Madai started to yell and scream and curse and started.
But this was the first time they approached
them?
The first time.
And they went twice. Mm-hmm. And the first time they chased after them, they started to to run. And Haridas Thakur said, "Why did you do that?" He was complaining. Actually, Haridas Thakur would quite often complain to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Nityananda was too strange. You know? He didn't want to go in Sankirtan with Nityananda. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you continue to go with Nityananda. So, anyway, what happened is that the second time that he went, Jagai Madai started to be really, to act very crazy. At the time when they were drunk, and I think Madai, I wonder if it was Madai who struck Nityananda or Jagai, I don't remember. And Jagai and Madai means Jagannath and Madhava. You know, Jagai and Madai, they were like, if we say Ishvarita or Antaranandito, as a common, I would say, it's a very.
It's a short name.
It's a nickname. Mm-hmm. Jagai and Madhava were nicknames for Jagannath and Madhava. Mm-hmm. They were the family name because they were from Vaishnava family. Mm-hmm. So, one of the two, I think Madhai, took a piece of broken pot, earthen pot, from the floor. And hit Nityananda very strongly in the head, and he started to bleed. And Nityananda didn't pay any offense or anything. I continued to say, "Jagai Madai, please chant Hare Krishna. Your Lord is Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. Worship him." Continue to preach to them without taking any offense. It's really so merciful. So deprived of any, how you say, of any false ego. You know, I'm Nityananda. How can you hit me? So the news of Jagai Madai hit him. Actually, one of the two hit him, and the other one wasn't happy about what happened. He started to reprimand the brother. I think Jagai was. I will try to find out. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know, and he became furious, absolutely furious. And he called the Sudarshan Chakra in his hand, and he rushed on the spot. He wanted to kill the two brothers.
But is it that he was somewhere else and somebody went to tell him, or he within his heart he knew that happened and then just appeared? Because I hear different versions.
I heard the version that I know is that somebody went to tell him.
To tell him the story. So it's not that he appeared all of a sudden.
No, he was told that the Lord Nityananda was being hit by the two sinful brothers. So he appeared with the Sudarshan Chakra. You could see the sparks, the glare,
fulgence.
The fulgence of the chakra of the Lord. He wanted to kill them. And Nityananda say, in Kali Yuga, if you want to kill sinful people, we have to kill everybody. Nobody would be alive. So we cannot establish this precedent of killing sinful people. You know, otherwise we have been crazy people even in our movement going around. You are too sinful, man. We cannot do. No, we don't do that. What Nityananda said to Lord Chaitanya, you came here to kill the demoniac mentality, the demoniac mood, not the and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then, you know, and accepted this point, and Jagai and Madai, both of them, although the demoniac drunk and everything, immediately they surrendered. And actually they become gurus, they had disciples in the future. There is still the gap that Madai built up, where he went to do, if you go to Mayapur, Srimayapur Dham, you find the Ghat of the Madai, where he went to do austerities to expiate from his activity, demoniac activity of hitting Lord Chaitanya, and they became very known saints. So from that, their curse finished, and they went back to the spiritual world. Anyway, so Prahlad Maharaj, there was a different time, a different lila, a different everything. So at that time, Vishnu wasn't considering to kill the demoniac mentality, but he just killed the demons. So when Varahadeva appeared in this world and killed Hiranyaksha, his brother Hiranyakashipu became very angry, and he went to in a forest to do austerities. He didn't know that his wife was pregnant at the time when he went for austerities. So when the devas came to know that Hiranyakashipu had gone in the forest for austerity, they thought, oh, this is the right time, and now this very big powerful demon is not there, so we can go and conquer the Adityas very easily. So they went with armies, etc. There is a very nice story told in the Vishnu Purana. In Vishnu Purana there is a lot of more details about Hiranyakashipu and the story of Narasimhadeva than in the Srimad Bhagavatam, many details that you don't find. Ishvari, mi prendi per favore la borsetta con lo... Ishvari? Mi prendi per favore lo spazzino dentro la borsa? So he... So they attacked the demons, they defeat them, and immediately they found in the palace, in Hiranyakashipu's palace, his wife, and he was pregnant, and she was pregnant. So the demons saw that she was pregnant. They said, put them in jail, you know, and as soon as she gives birth, immediately let's kill him, because if he had just nearly as demoniac as powerful as the father, we got a problem. We got a double problem. So, but at that time, you know who? Narada Muni came, and he said. And he said to Indra and all the other demons, no, don't do this. Let this this lady come to me. And all the devas said, oh, Narada Muni is a sannyasi, wants a woman, he wants to be alone with a woman in the ashram. And anyway, they said, okay, Narada Muni asked us, we had to comply. So Hiranyakashipu's wife went to live in Narada Muni ashram, and Narada Muni was speaking philosophy. He was speaking philosophy to a pregnant woman that they won't understand much. She was quite materialistic herself. She was even falling asleep. And in the Vishnu Purana was a story that Narada Muni would even at that time he would continue speaking.
He was not preaching to her.
Because he was not preaching to her. And Prahlad Maharaj was inside her mother's womb. He was listening to the philosophy. And I can't believe it. It was a very difficult time living. So the certain time when Hiranyakashipu came back, he delivered all the Adityas who were being defeated by the devas and reestablished again his kingdom, and he was so powerful that nobody could kill him, nobody, because he could have been killed only in such a difficult and awkward situation. And like he could not be killed outside or inside, he could not be killed by man, or he could not be killed by an animal, he could not be killed with any weapon imaginable in the universe, the day or night. It was the blessing that he got from Brahma, that first of all he asked for being immortal. But Brahma said, I'm not mortal myself, so how can I give you something that I don't have? And Hiranyakashipu thought, so let's receive it's such a difficult condition and never will be present there. So he defeated the devas, he became the emperor of the entire universe, he would substitute all the devas, he was so powerful that he controlled the sun and the moon and the rain and the oceans, everything, just by himself, just by his power. He would decide if the sun would come up or not. And also he stopped all sacrifices, all the yagyas, all the brahminic activities, for instance the cow protection, is because what the brahmanas do is that by these activities they please the demigods.
They become powerful.
The demigods become powerful because they do the yagyas for them. They become more and more powerful. But since the demigods they were deprived of all power to do anything in the universe, so it was useless. And Hiranyakashipu said, "Now you have to do sacrifices to me because I control everything." So what happened is that he had several sons, and one of his sons was Prahlad, and he was particularly dear to his father. And
but did he went to rescue the wife from the ashram, or the wife came back, and Narada Muni brought her back after she gave birth, or?
Prahlad Maharaj stayed in his mother womb for a very long time. Hiranyakashipu came and delivered it and went to rescue his wife and the demons, and Prahlad took birth after his father came back in the kingdom. Also the Vishnu Purana tells. So a demoniac person wants his son to be educated in a certain way, to learn politics, economy, you know, these kind of things, because they are quite materialistic. They are not interested in philosophy. Well, yeah, maybe philosophy, but not spiritual,
not our type
of philosophy. So, and his son Prahlad had a very strange characteristics. You know, that he would do sacrifices to Vishnu in his small room, but since he was a kid, so his father didn't take it very seriously until he was sent to school. And he had two teachers who were from Brahmana family, but they were employed by the king of the demons. They were quite materialistic themselves. Their names were Shandava and Amarka. They were very famous at that time as teachers. So no matter how much the quantity of materialistic lessons they would give, Prahlad continued to talk about Vishnu and say that this is all useless because you are going to die. Better to devote our life for spiritual achievement. So the stories are quite long. It's not that they didn't last a very short time. Then Hiranyakashipu came to know about these things, and first he chastised the two teachers as not able, but then he realized that it was not the two teachers' fault, that it was that Prahlad had... So he wondered how Prahlad, such a young kid, could have all this knowledge. Transcendental. He was speaking high philosophy about the spiritual world, how the world is made, the various incarnation of God. How did he know? He didn't know that Narada Muni has preached, that taught all the transcendental knowledge to his son, and that Prahlad was listening from inside the his mother's womb. So what happened at the end is that Hiranyakashipu put him on the corner, and he asked him, "Either you had to give up your Vishnu, also because I hate Vishnu very much. He killed my brother. So not only I don't think that he's the Supreme Lord, I am more powerful. I defeated all of the demigods. And where was he? Why did not prevent me from doing it? Because he's afraid of me. That's why he didn't do anything. When I defeated Indra and Chandra and Varuna, I defeated everyone. I defeated even Yamaraj, the god of death. So where was this your Vishnu? It didn't come out. Maybe my brother was in a Hiranyaksha, was in a weak moment or something, and he was defeated by Varahadeva. But not with me. I'm more powerful than my brother. But Prahlad Maharaj did not budge, and he continued to sustain the philosophy that Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. At the end, he lost patience completely, and he said, "Where is your Vishnu?" So you can imagine this huge palace, you know, with huge pillars, you know, a huge everything. Hiranyakashipu was very big, so everything was very big. And he said, "Where is your Vishnu? It's maybe in this pillar on his back." And Prahlada said, "Yes." Why did he say yes? Because the moment the Hiranyakashipu made this question, Narasimhadeva came out from the pillar and showed himself to Prahlada, and Prahlada said, "Yes, he's there." And then Hiranyakashipu said, "I'll show you your Vishnu." So he took his sword, he struck the pillar, and then in the same moment that he struck the pillar with his sword, a terrible roar that encompassed all the three worlds, all the universe. So can you imagine the power of this roar? And even the devas began to tremble. They were scared, dead. What is this? They didn't know about Narasimhadeva. Of course, everyone was hopeful that Vishnu would come to deliver them and give them back their service, their position as devas, the universe. And then he saw Narasimhadeva's huge, half lion, half man. You can see that we chant the song of Narasimhadeva every day, Tavakaratama. So he was Lord Vishnu in this world, and there was a big fight. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is quite short. He just say, you know, that there was some fight. Then he took Hiranyakashipu and killed him. But actually, in other Puranas, like the Vishnu Purana, there is a big story how he defeated the whole of Hiranyakashipu's army that came against him. And also, their fight lasted a very, very long time. Don't ask me how much, I don't remember, because my memory is completely destroyed, but it lasted a long, long time. And at the end, he killed him with his nails. Why the nails? Because he received a blessing from Brahma that he could not be killed with any weapon. So why Vishnu, you should ask, why Vishnu didn't just say, who cares, you know, about Brahma's...
I'm Vishnu, I can do whatever.
I can do whatever I want. I don't need to obey my respect so much. Well, this is a question we've been asked by quite a few sages in the past. In the Puranas, you find several times this question. And the right answer is that if Krishna himself or any of his incarnation won't respect the blessings of the demigods or of anyone else, then would be a breach of confidence in the people. And Krishna does not want, or actually he wants, but he being realistic, he knows that not everyone will worship him. Some people want to worship Brahma. Some people want to worship Shiva, some people want to worship Lakshmi, Saraswati,
Durga,
the Indra, the Chandra, Varuna, no? Kubera, make money, or Danesh. So he has to keep the respect for all these personalities, otherwise he would disrupt the faith of the of their devotees in their gods. So by seeing that even Krishna respect, just like Krishna respected the Brahmastra, just like Krishna respected the blessing that Shiva gave to his devotees, and so many instances we can find. So Krishna always respect the blessings of his devotees, and so in this way, Vishnu came and he killed Hiranyakashipu, not inside nor outside, he was in a threshold, and he didn't kill him day or night, but it was dusk, and he didn't kill him in the air or on the floor, but it was in his lap, and Hiranyakashipu could never envision such a scenario. He was not a man, he was not an animal, he was half a half of everything, he was a new creature. Didn't exist, half man, half lion before Hiranyakashipu, so before Narasimhadeva. So he invented all the situation to respect Brahma's blessings upon Hiranyakashipu. And so Hiranyakashipu was killed by Narasimhadeva. Narasimha was in such a fighting spirit that even after the death of Hiranyakashipu, he continued to roar. He was like, already finished. What do I do now? He was an excess of energy. So nobody would come close. Nobody. All the devas and Brahma, Shiva, nobody. Narasimhadeva was in it such a, so they saw the little Prahlad. He said, "You go, go." So Prahlad went, and immediately Narasimhadeva, out of love for his devotee Prahlad, then he put his hand, his lotus hand, on his head, and he was pacified. In this way, Prahlad Maharaj for us it's very important. There's a lot of lessons we can learn from his life and his activities. Just like, for instance, never be afraid that Krishna will protect you, because there is a certain time that Hiranyakashipu will try to kill him. You know, his father killing his son. Look how demoniac he was. He threw him from a cliff, and he, you know, he landed like this. So he tried to kill him by putting him under the feet of an elephant, and the elephant won't push down. He tried to kill him. Who knows the story of Holi?
Holi?
Holi.
The festival of colors?
Yeah, you know the festival. Yeah, the festival of colors, you know. You know, of course. Mm-hmm. You ever heard about that? No? There is a festival in India called Holi. And in these festivals, this is something that Radha Krishna were doing, throwing colors one on each other. And sometimes with ceilings, you know, in India it's a big thing. It's like a carnival, but it's really, really big. You know, there are millions of people doing that. And actually, Holi was the sister, one of the sisters of Hiranyakashipu. Her name was Holi. And one of the time when Hiranyakashipu trying to kill her. Prahlad, he sent her sister, because her sister had a particular shawl that until she had it on her shoulder, fire could not burn her. So Holly said, "Oh my, how you say, my
nephew,
my dear nephew, come on my lap, sit down on my lap." So he sat down on the lap, and immediately big flames came up, trying to, but Prahlad was not concerned; it didn't burn. At the contrary, some wind came and blew away the shawl from Holly's shoulders, and immediately she burned to ashes. So originally the festival of Holi was a big festival to remember and to make feast out of the killing of the sister of Hiranyakashipu. And Krishna and Radharani themselves, they would remember and make feast.
But what is the relationship with the colors?
Well,
it's just like a celebration.
It is a celebration. There is no specification. At least I haven't read anything why the colors. But you know, since there was a big festivity that this demon was killed, then the holy festival today. Even ourselves, when we go, because it is right before Gaur Purnima. So often we go to India for the Gaur Purnima, and it's a difficult time. 1 week before Gaur Purnima, you really cannot get out of the temple. You know,
you will get
most
colored.
Of the
yeah,
because they're strong. They're really especially Westerners. For them, they are at night when they go back, probably that, oh, I colored the 3 Italians. And 4 Americans, like this, you know? Because they first they threw you the call. Where are you from? So they were 1 Italian. So they take a lot of fun throwing colors to Westerners, really, in Vrindavan. So I myself don't, you know, many devotees, they are irritated by this. Myself, I don't, you know. So when I was living in Vrindavan, I would leave my dhoti, you remember that?
Yeah.
The dhoti and the t-shirt of the year, the previous year, because you cannot wear it twice. And I would go out and take the dice, you know. I mean, it was, you remember, Holly?
See?
It was a beautiful, it was really beautiful, very joyful thing.
And then la
fena. Uh-huh. Yeah. They throw also a lot of water, so you get it's not particularly hot yet in India, so it's a little fresh, let's say, you know, because it's about February. So she got a lot of water, she got a cold.
Here they do in America. In many countries, they
do. They do. Colors. Yes, they do. This is an Indian festivity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this is Prahlad Maharaj became a very important personality in the universe. And even today, we like to tell the story.
Mm. So when Lord Nrisimhadev killed Hiranyakasipu, he kind of chastised Lord Brahma for giving this kind of benedictions. So, and he says, "Don't give this kind of benedictions anymore again." So,
no, I never. No, he didn't do that. Because you had to give benediction. It's something. It's if you do austerities, it's not like with Krishna. You do it out of love, so you don't expect anything in return, because you didn't do it for a result. But those kind of austerities, you expect results. It's like going to buy a car. You give the money. You give me the car. It's not that you say, okay, I give you the money, well, I prefer not to give you the car. it's a commercial relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a little too much saying it in these words, but it's something like that. The austerities, this austerity, are explained in the Vedas, and also the results are explained in the Vedas. So the devas have to give what they want. They have to.
Even sometimes it's against their welfare, no? Like when Lord Shiva gave the benediction to this, what is this demon, Sankarasura, that want the benediction, that whoever he puts his hand,
yes, I remember,
hands, head will crack. No?
Yes, yeah.
And then the first thing he tried to do is put in Lord Shiva's.
Yes.
So even the demigods know this is going to happen, they still have to give it.
Yes. They had to give it because they had to satisfy them. It's the devas had to give satisfaction to materialistic people. They have to, because the only way by which they understand. And of course, the demon tried to kill Lord Shiva, but he didn't succeed.
He said, let me try and see if it's
let me try, just in case,
just
you know.
In case.
Just like when you buy a car, you want to try it, no? Let me try it. Then I will buy. So, it's... there were many instances. So this is something that because if it doesn't work, if you don't give, then people we stop doing sacrifices, because you know I will do sacrifices and Brahma will not give it to me what I want, you know. So he has to give it. In this way, the Vedic wisdom and sacrifices are upheld, sustained. Because if they do, if it does not, then how people in the lower level of consciousness, how can they come up in the higher levels? It would not be possible. So they do, they get some kind of purification, they may become powerful, but it's powerful anyway, it's temporary. And you say, so maybe it's worse if you give them power and then it finishes, not because it will realize it after, that I spent 1,000 years, many lives, trying to get something and now it's finished. Because it's like money, you know. You ask me money, I give you money, and you start to spend it, at the end it's finished. And when it's finished, it's finished. You are with your misery of getting accustomed to be powerful, and it's finished. Doesn't come out. You try to convince people, but you don't make it, because there is no power. Or you try to make money, and you don't make money because it's not your karma anymore. Now we have some experience of this in my life. I remember that as a young devotee, I was able to do a lot of money for the temple. You know, it was very easy. I would ask money, and they would give it to me very easily. Now, I have a problem for the boga. It just finished. That capacity, for some reason, is not there anymore. And you realize that. That it's not that now you are powerless. Even before, that was not your power. Because if it was your power, then how come it finished? If you have this power, then you will keep it. But since it's not, because it's not that I don't want to do it, it's just that I can't. So the proof that the power doesn't come from us, you know, is that in a moment you have it, and the next moment you don't have it, and there is no reason why not. I mean, if you think to your lives, as if I think to my own life, I don't see any moment in which I did something to lose this capacity to have people give me donations, you know. And so something happened, I don't know. What is that? and maybe karma, it might be just Krishna's will, that before he wanted to teach me one lesson, now he wants to teach me another lesson. And I had to learn both. The first lesson, I learned it, because now I'm unable to do it, so I learned. That was not my capacity. I thought it was my capacity. Oh, how good I am. You know. I can convince people. You know, I opened temple from zero. You know, I had people give me a lot of money. It'd be big temples. I was managing a lot of money. Now, I cannot convince people to give me $10. You know? So, it's... So, how come is that? Both, in both cases, before, I was purified by having the results of my desire. Now, I will become purified by not having the results of my desire. It's a different lesson that you learn. So don't become attached to your capacities, opulences, because they may go away anytime. And just do as Prahlad Maharaj did. You know, he just trusted the Lord.
So that brings me a question. It's like when Lord Krishna left the planet, and as soon as he left the planet, Arjuna lost all his power. Even he couldn't shoot a single arrow from his Gandiva bow. And he have a big realization about that. It's time to go. So something like this is what you realize.
Yes. This, as many, many other stories that we can tell from the scriptures, exactly what I was talking about. That Arjuna could win against the greatest warriors in the world, Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was the only one, actually, especially during the time when there was Bhishma and Drona and Karna, which is, well, 18 days, so basically the whole of the Kurukshetra battle. He was the only one who could resist. All the others, they could resist against them a little some time, but then they were overwhelmed, because Bhishma, Drona and Karna, they were the most powerful warriors in the world. So they would call Arjuna, please come, you know. And there is a story, Samsataka story. You know the Samsataka story? Oh, that's a long story, I will tell you. Okay, now I will tell you now. The Samsataka means in Sanskrit a vow that you take.
A vow.
And this is a death vow. I will do this even if I had to lose my life. I will not retreat, you know, against... So since there was, during the Kurukshetra battle, the Kuravas, they realized that it was, even if they were, from a material point of view, more powerful than the Pandavas, they were four Akshayini mass, more. You know, and they had biggest invincible warriors like Bhishma and Drona. But they, for some reason, they could not win, actually. They would kill a lot of people, killing, but at the end of the day, they would count that the Pandavas were winning. They were winning. So they thought, maybe we should take Yudhishthira, a prisoner. And the Kurava said, yes, we should do that. That's a good idea. But it's impossible because Arjuna is always there.
So they say to take Arjuna very far.
Yes.
Two brothers.
Yes. There's a name where... Oh my God. Vinda and Anuvinda, they were the kings of... I will tell you tomorrow. Sorry. I mean, I wrote a book on the Mahabharata. I even forget my own books that I wrote. It's my second book that I wrote in 92. Anyway, I think the names were Vinda and Anuvinda, I'm sure. So they took the vow of challenging Arjuna and take him on the other side of the battlefield. So there is one rule that when you are you are challenged, you cannot say no, you cannot refuse. So the Pandavas knew that the Kauravas were trying to organize in such a way that Drona could take Yudhisthira as a prisoner. And he knew it. But since then, they were trying to... But since they were challenging him, and it was not just two, there were millions of warriors, there were the whole army. Mm-hmm. It was one entire Akshoini. After Bhishma it was during the 5 days when Dronacharya was in charge of yes, actually Bhishma was not dead, he was fallen. Yes. So just a detail. So they challenged Arjuna, and Arjuna knew it, but he couldn't refuse, so he entrusted the care of Yudhisthira to very valiant warriors, you know. But and then he went to fight against the Samsatakas, but Drona could not. Sometimes Arjuna would just kill thousands of people and then run back to Yudhisthira, and then again they, Arjuna, come here. So at the end he killed them all, of course. And Drona was not able to kill. There is a lot of stories around this Samsataka story, and how many valiant warriors they were killed in trying to defend Yudhisthira, or trying to take him.
Because the brothers, they knew that Arjuna was going to kill them, so it was...
Oh, they knew, totally, was totally sure. Yeah. Nobody was. So at the end, they could see that sometimes they were just details, you know, like the night when Ghatotkacha tried to defend Yudhisthira, and at the end he was killed by Karna, and everybody was desperate, you know. Oh, Ghatotkacha is Bhima's son. He was one of the most powerful warrior in the battlefield, but Krishna was smiling. He was very happy. Because in all the battlefield, there was only one thing that could actually kill
Arjuna,
and it was a spear which was given to Karna by Indra himself.
Indra himself,
he knows the story. By Indra, he had this spear. So Ghatotkacha was a terrible Rakshasa. He could fly in the sky, he was huge, it was dark, he would fight in the night, nobody could see him, you know. He was killing people from above. Sometimes he would disappear. He was a Rakshasa with a lot of... He was the son of Bhima and Idimba. Remember the story of Idimba? The sister of Idimba, her name was Idimbi. So Ghatotkacha is the son of Bhima, very powerful, and a Rakshasi. So he
had the magic.
He had the power of the father and the magic of the mother. So at the end, Ghatotkacha was so powerful that he was annihilating the whole of the Kauravas army. So Duryodhana himself said to Karna, please use it or we are finished. And then said, you are lost the war, you know. And he said, we are going to lose it anyway, you know. This Rakshasa is killing us all. So he had to take his spears and launch it and kill Ghatotkacha, and Krishna was very happy because Arjuna was protected. Because otherwise, and that's why Krishna, who said, I will not intervene, but intervene continuously. Mm-hmm. And one of his intervening was that every time the Karna would try to meet Arjuna, before the use of his Vajra, there was a call that his dart was called Vajra. Vajra is a generic name, but it was given to this particular weapon of Karna. It was all. Then he would lead him away somewhere else and have people come in front of Karna, so Karna could not reach Arjuna.
Now, if Indra is the father of Arjuna, why did he give this weapon to Karna, knowing that he was going to kill Arjuna, he was going to use it to kill Arjuna?
This is very good question. Very good question. There is a story who happened before the beginning of the Mahabharata or the Kurukshetra war. And the story was that Indra was very worried because Karna was born with a natural
kavacha.
It was armor. Mm-hmm. It was an armor. All his body was covered by very thick skin. It could not be penetrated. And he had also two earrings. And this natural armor and these earrings, which were given to him by his father, was Vibhasvan, the god of the
Sangha.
So he was invincible. So he, before the beginning, Indra took the garb of a mendicant. He went there and he said, Karna, your vow, because Karna had a vow, he would never refuse something from a Brahmana. If a Brahmana asks you something, never refuse. Even today, don't do that. Someone asks, do. Mm-hmm. Do more than you are asked. So he had his vow. He was asked to give something. And Karna said, whatever you want, I will give you. And Indra asked him to peel off his armor and his earrings. And Karna said, ask everything that you want, everything else. I will give you everything. He said, no, I just want to do that. And he did. And then Karna said, now I gave you what you asked. But I know that you are not a Brahmana. You are a Kshatriya also. You are Indra. So you also have the same vow that I... Indra also had made the same vow to give anything that been asked. So now I gave you, you had to give me something. And Indra said, yes, what do you want? He said, give me your spear. So now, Karna was more vulnerable personally, but he was more powerful because he had this weapon who could not fail. It was impossible. So Indra went to Krishna and said, this is what happened. And Krishna says, I will think about. And he did in such a way that the only day when the warriors would fight at night, because warriors never fight at night, never, it's inauspicious to die at night, it's very bad, you go to hell, you never fight. But Krishna arranged a very special occurrence that everybody was so angry that they continued, said, I don't care if I die, if I go to hell, I want to kill everybody on the other party. Who knows why, what happened to make everyone so angry? The killing of Abhimanyu.
Oh, what is it?
The killing of Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna. You know the story also. Arjuna was away on the other side of the battlefield.
And Drona made the chakra formation.
Yes, made the chakra formation.
And nobody could break.
Nobody could enter.
Had heard it on the wall.
Yes, yes. Only one, Subhata. Two people only could enter. Into the one was Arjuna, and the other one was his son Abhimanyu.
But he didn't know how to come out.
He knew how to enter, but he didn't know how to come out.
Fell asleep, right? Subhadra fell asleep.
Yes.
When Arjuna was telling
he didn't know how to come out of that formation. So what happened is that Abhimanyu said, okay, I can enter and break the formation, but you have to follow me, otherwise I will be alone. And Yudhishthira said, Jayadrata.
Jayadrata stopped
him. Jayadrata is another story. How Arjuna killed Jayadrata just in the right moment, and Krishna actually made the Santa. Oh, this is a long story. We're not telling this story.
And then also how he got the blessings of stopping four of the Pandavas at the same time.
Jayadratha, yes. Yes, but never he could not stop Arjuna.
Sure.
Because he was blessed to stop all the Pandavas, but it was impossible to stop Arjuna. Because Arjuna was powerful, but Arjuna also had a special... Because this is what Duryodhana thought. Duryodhana thought that I want Krishna's army, which was called the Narayanas. And they were all very, very powerful. So Krishna said, Arjuna and Duryodhana, they came to Krishna asking to be the ally. So Arjuna came and stayed in Krishna's lotus feet because he was very humble, he was a devotee. But Duryodhana was very proud. I am the king. So he stood by his side. So when Krishna woke up, because he was lying down, he saw Arjuna first. And Duryodhana said, yes, but I arrived here first. And Krishna said, yes, but, you know, I saw Arjuna first. So
But also give. Because he was younger?
No, there was a reason. There was a reason. It's because he saw him first. So Krishna said, okay, you choose myself, without participating, taking weapons, only myself alone,
full army.
My full army. And Duryodhana was sweating. He said, my God, he's taking the whole army now. What I do with Krishna? Now alone, he doesn't even fight. You see how the people doesn't understand. And Arjuna said, no, I want you. And Arjuna said, oh my God. You know, what a foolish choice. And this was what made Arjuna win. And Arjuna said, I want you as my driver. And Krishna said, well, you want me? I can do something else. Maybe I can, be a general. I said, no, I want you just to take the reins of my chariot. And that were the Arjuna Partasarathi, the Partasarathi, which means the driver, the chariot driver of Arjuna came out. And Krishna, if you read the Mahabharata, you will see so many times.
Yeah, Krishna was making so many tricks.
Even
before the war.
Oh yeah, everywhere. It's just only one. You know, he said was Arjuna against Karna, and so they were exchanging arrows and all kinds of things. So at a certain point, Karna had many weapons. You know, because he was. He learned the art of war from Parashurama. You know, he was not Parashurama. He's an incarnation of Krishna, Vishnu. And he shot an arrow which could not fail. You know, it was very, very fast. So this chariot, Arjuna's chariot, was into the mud. It could not move. And Karna's charioteer said to Karna, "Don't aim to his neck. Aim to the body." But Karna said, "No, I cannot do that. I already took the aim. And the Kshatriya, once he takes the aim, it doesn't change." So he took the aim at Arjuna's neck. And Krishna became so heavy that the whole chariot came down into the mud. They were stuck in the mud. And then it took away only the diadem on the top. Arjuna had a kind of a crown in the head of a diadem. And then it took away. And that was the last of his great weapons, because those divine weapons Karna had, they were all of divine origins. And they could be used only once. So at that point, Karna was a normal warrior, and Arjuna could kill him. There are many of these stories, like the stories of the Jayadrata killing. Jayadrata killing was that Arjuna had only one day to kill Jayadrata, otherwise he would have to burn himself. Burn himself. And the sun went down over the horizon, and Krishna made him come up.
I thought he covered with some clouds.
Creator.
Oh, there was a different story. The Mahabharata says what I said. The Mahabharata said that Krishna made the sun come up for just one moment, and he shot the arrow and killed Jayadrata. And the Jayadratas, you know, the Jayadrata could not be killed.
Or like whoever cut his head. No, whatever the head falls.
Whoever make his falls.
Yes, his head
would
break.
His head will explode.
Krishna, while Arjuna had 1 second to show this arrow, you know, then Krishna said, "Remember the story of Jayadrata. His father's name was Asvadrata, something, I don't remember." So he sent continuous waves of arrows until the head of Jayadrata went on his father's lap, who was meditating in some cave. And when the Muni felt that something went on his lap, he woke up and he said, it's cramped. So then he provoked his son's head to fall down, and immediately he was killed. Cool. And there were a lot of stories. This also, Krishna in that occasion saved Arjuna, but so many times. But when Krishna left, and he was carrying all the Yadus ladies out of the city, you know, they were attacked by a band of dacoits, you know, normal thieves. That maybe even one of us could defeat. He could not do anything. He just was defeated. After having defeated the most powerful warriors in the world, he was defeated by a worthless group of thieves. It's because all the... And also there is another story. When everything finished, Krishna said to Arjuna, "Okay, get down on the chariot." Mm. And Arjuna said, "No, you should go first." He said, "No, you will go first." And Arjuna went down on the chariot, and then Krishna got down on the chariot, and the chariot exploded and became ashes, exploding ashes. Mm. And Arjuna was amazed, and he said, "Why? What happened?" He said, "Arjuna, you don't understand. This chariot was surrounded by all the weapons of Bhishma and Arjuna, and why do you think you were not killed?" "Because I was there. Until I was in the chariot, you were protected. The moment I got down from the chariot, you are dead." So this is the story, how all the power, actually all the powers come from Krishna. We should not think that we are successful because we are great, we are intelligent, we are powerful, we are lucky, we know how to do things. All the power that we have ultimately come from Krishna, or by karma, and they will finish, or by Krishna's blessings, and they will stay until Krishna wants.
Uno más respecto a, siguiendo esa línea de esa misma pregunta, cuando llegamos a ese punto donde ya no tenemos esa protección de Krishna, o Krishna decide cambiarnos esa situación, primero, ¿cómo lo entendemos? Y segundo, ¿qué hacemos cuando lo entendemos?
Varias cosas que se puede hacer. Primera cosa, hay una ¿cómo?
Lo dije en español.
Oh. There are many things that we can do. First thing we should do, we should understand the philosophical principle, because it's very important to give explanation to ourselves Krishna is the origin of our power and luck. And then what we should do is that we simply have to be detached. And if we are not able anymore to do something, we'll do something else. And if Krishna takes away all capacities, we just serve. He's a humble servant. And we go to Guru Krishna and sadhus and say, I am just good for nothing. I am unfortunate. I am all bad qualities. Please simply accept my humble service. And we go to Guru. That's why we have a Guru. Why we have a Guru? The Guru, what is that? A Guru is not a picture on the side of our bed. A Guru is a person. So why we want a living Guru? Because we can go to him and say, Gurudeva, I don't know what to do. I am not able to do anything. So tell me what to do. And he will tell you. Maybe he wants you to do another thing. Maybe he wants you just chant Hare Krishna.
Just keep being a fool.
There is nothing who can happen that may prevent us from chanting Hare Krishna. And that's why we have a Guru. There is no spiritual advancement without Guru.
Like Lord Chaitanya, he came to his Guru and said, I'm just a fool.
Yes, yes.
Okay, just chant the holy names.
Yeah. And this is what a disciple is about. Because if you go to Guru thinking, I know, or I can do, then the Guru cannot teach you, because you already think to know. You think that you know.
No. What if, for example, you have a good talent for art, and you say, Guru Maharaj, I have this talent, can you engage me in Krishna services? Would that be something like to consider, or is it still too arrogant to say, I have this talent, I just want to engage in Krishna service?
You can tell him, yes. He will tell you, he will recognize if you said it in an arrogant way, and he may smash you. If he is particularly gentle with you, or if he thinks that you are too foolish to take his chastisement, then he will be kind and say, oh yeah, you are very qualified, oh, big talent, oh yes, ah, I thank God that he has such a qualified disciple, he struck me. Sometimes the Guru thinks that his disciples are just too unqualified, so much that he doesn't chastise them. When he sees that his disciple is qualified, then he will intervene and tell him, hey, you're good for nothing. Just like one time there was one. Oh, Srila Prabhupada was very heavy. It was very heavy. It wasn't. I never saw Srila Prabhupada angry or anything. The little I stayed with him, he was always very kind to me, to everyone. So I didn't see him in that aspect, because I was so shy and timid. I am still shy and timid as nature. That is, Srila Prabhupada would chastise me, I would just die. Just becoming liquid, just disappear. Yes, I remember the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada, I was having difficulty to take his glance, because Prabhupada had such a powerful eyes. I was really so. But some disciples told me, you know, we know some stories, like one time there was this devotee in India. It was very, very hot, and there were mosquitoes, you know, in India, full of insects, etc. So this devotee was trying to fend Srila Prabhupada, no? But he was trying to do it very devotionally. Then Srila Prabhupada turned to him, oh, you are just useless. And another devotee took the fan and started and said, yes, this is service. A service that should not be, yes, devotional, but you should be practical. You are fanning Srila Prabhupada to chase away insects. So he was full of insects, the devotee was very, very gentle.
Artistic.
You are just useless.
And at that time, Srila Prabhupada, one devotee went to Srila Prabhupada, he was very humble. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, no, you are not the most nothing. You are just insignificant. So there are a lot of stories like this. And
I meditate always one of these many, that I said, if Prabhupada said this to me, as you say, I'll be finished. It was one Prabhu in Vrindavan singing, and he was very proud. He has a beautiful voice, and actually he had it. And Prabhupada somehow understood that was his mentality. And one time he was singing, and he passed by, and he said, who is this Rakshasa who thinks he sings so beautiful?
Oh, yeah.
And that came to his knowledge, this Prabhu, and he was finished. His false ego was finished.
There was a lot of stories, and this is one of the reasons Guru means heavy. Mm. But sometimes the Guru chooses not to be heavy because he sees his disciples. If I chastise him, it's just. But if you have a guru like Srila Prabhupada, some people said, oh, why we are not Prabhupada disciples? You know, like, not disrespecting any of Prabhupada disciples or giving initiation, of course, everyone is respectful, but at the same time, one guru, non-ISKCON guru, said, because you are just unfortunate. You are not qualified to have a guru like Srila Prabhupada. That's all. Of course, in my case, it's not a time Prabhupada decided because I was qualified. I was just unbelievably lucky. That's all. But otherwise, normally, to get a guru like that, one has to be very lucky. But you also are very lucky. You have a wonderful guru. And nothing to be said. It's just that Srila Prabhupada used this heavy instrument to educate his disciples.
Your question?
No. There was
too much information.
I enjoy listening.
There was one disciple of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu whose name was Haridas. One, he was a cook. He was a sannyasi.
Is it?
And a cook.
Chota Haridas.
Yeah, because there was two Haridas. One was older. Chota means small, little, younger. And this Haridas, particular Haridas, was very. So he was a sannyasi. And he had to cook for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went asking for some rice to various devotees, and for some reason, he didn't. I don't know what reason. The only person he met was a devotee, Vaishnavi, called Madhava Devi. Madhava Devi was over 80 years old at that time. So, you cannot have any lust or attraction for 80 years. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know that Chodaridas went to Madhava Devi and took the rice, even if it was for his service, he slashed him, kicked him away, and never wanted to. And he suicided himself. But then he achieved, because he was also a very sweet singer. Eternally is one of the favorite of Lord Chaitanya singers. So there is certain position that the acharya takes according to his conviction of what is better. He can choose to be very very heavy or cutting or not. When Shivananda Seya came, and you know, Shivananda Seya and his wife and his children, they went to Chaitanya and talk, you know. The children would play with his lotus feet. One is Kavi Karnapura, who suck his toe. So it's, you see, but they were Grihastas, so were different. A lot of stories. Okay, so Hare Krishna.